smother of wet ashes, and his eyes glittered as he turned to Arryn. He sat down on the thwart. "Well done, lad," he said hoarsely. "It is not easy. Talking to dragons." Arryn got them food, for they had not eaten all day, and the mage said no more until they had eaten and drunk. By then the sun was low to the horizon, though in these northern latitudes, and not long past midsummer, night came late and slowly. "Well," he said at last, "Orm Embar has, after his fashion, told me much. He says that the one we seek is, and is not, on Celador. It is hard for a dragon to speak plainly. They do not have plain minds. And even when one of them would speak the truth to a man, which is seldom, he does not know how truth looks to a man. So I asked him, even as thy father Orm is on Celador. For as you know, there Orm and Aerith Ackby died in their battle. And he answered no and yes. You will find him on Celador, but not on Celador." Sparrowhawk paused and pondered, chewing on a crust of hard bread. Maybe he meant that though the man is not on Celador, yet I must go there to get to him. Maybe. I asked him then of the other dragons. He said that this man has been among them, having no fear of them, for though killed, he returns from death in his body, alive. Therefore they fear him as a creature outside nature. Their fear gives his wizardry hold over them, and he takes the speech of the making from them, leaving them prey to their own wild nature. So they devour one another, or take their own lives, plunging into the sea, a loathly death for the fire serpent, the beast of wind and fire. Then I said, "Where is thy lord Kalesin?" And all he would answer was, "In the west," which might mean that Kalesin has flown away to the other lands, which dragons say lie farther than ever ship has sailed, or it may not mean that. So then I ceased my questions, and he asked his, saying, "I flew over Kaltuel, returning north, and over the Torring Gates. On Kaltuel I saw villagers killing a baby on an altar stone, and on Ingat I saw a sorcerer killed by his townsfolk throwing stones at him. Will they eat the baby, think you, Ged? Will the sorcerer come back from death and throw stones at his townsfolk?" I thought he mocked me and was about to speak in anger, but he was not mocking. He said, "The sense has gone out of things. There is a hole in the world, and the sea is running out of it. The light is running out. We will be left in the dry land. There will be no more speaking and no more dying." So at last, I saw what he would say to me. Arryn did not see it, and moreover was sorely troubled. For Sparrowhawk, in repeating the dragon's words, had named himself by his own true name, unmistakably. This brought unwelcome into Arryn's mind the memory of that tormented woman of Lorbenary crying out, "My name is Akarin." If the powers of wizardry and of music and speech and trust were weakening and withering among men, if an insanity of fear was coming on them so that, like the dragons bereft of reason, they turned on each other to destroy, if all this were so, would his lord escape it? Was he so strong? He did not look strong. Sitting hunched over his supper of bread and smoked fish, with hair grayed and fire singed, and slight hands, and a tired face. Yet the dragon feared him. "What irks you, lad?" Only the truth would do with him. My lord, you spoke your name. Oh, I forgot I had not done so earlier. You will need my true name if we go where we must go. He looked up, chewing at Arryn. Did you think I grew senile and went about babbling my name, like old bleared men past sense and shame? Not yet, lad. No, said Arryn, so confused that he could say nothing else. He was very weary. The day had been long and full of dragons, and the way ahead grew dark. Arryn, said the mage. No, Labannon. Where we go, there is no hiding. There all bear their own true names. The dead cannot be hurt, said Arryn somberly. But it is not only there, not in death only, that men take their names. Those who can be most hurt, the most vulnerable, those who have given love and do not take it back, they speak each other's names. The faithful-hearted, the givers of life. You are worn out, lad. Lie down and sleep. There's nothing to do now but keep the course all night. And by morning, we shall see the last island of the world. In his voice was an insuperable gentleness. Arryn curled up in the prow, and sleep began to come into him at once. He heard the mage begin a soft, almost whispering chant, not in the Hardic tongue, but in the words of the making. And as he began to understand at last, and to remember what the words meant, just before he understood them, he fell fast asleep. Silently the mage stowed away their bread and meat, looked to the lines, made all trim in the boat, and then, taking the guide line of the sail in hand and sitting down on the afterthwart, he set the mage wind strong in the sail. Tireless, look far sped north, an arrow over the sea. He looked down at Arryn. The boy's sleeping face was lit red-gold by the long sunset. The rough hair was wind-stirred. The soft, easy